Good morning, everyone. You are very welcome to St. Stephen's Green Unitarian Church. Welcome to everyone who is watching and listening on our webcam, and welcome to you if you are listening to us on a recordings page on our website. My name is Gavin Byrne, and I am a member of this congregation, and we have an open pulpit tradition here in the church where members of the congregation like me are given the opportunity to lead a service, and it also gives our minister, Reverend Bridget Spain, a break. Our opening words is from our hymn book, number 442. So let us read it together, 442. And it's called, We Bid You Welcome. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come hurt and afraid. We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith, who come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. And now let us turn to the very back of the book, to express all that we believe in our church community. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other, and with God. And now we light our chalice, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer, in celebration, in searching, and in love. This sacred space, which is gifted to us, is now alive with friendship, with song, poetry, and the wisdom of many souls. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but we are connected in mystery, in miracle, to the universe, to this community, and to each other. And our first hymn this morning is number 298, Wake Now My Senses. Now, our first reading this morning will be read by Mary O'Brien.
Good morning. The reading is from a meditation, Manifesting Grace Through Gratitude. My inner light is guiding me. So on a regular basis, I look for guidance in my life. I don't know from whom or from where I seek this guidance, but many people would refer to this as their higher self or selves. Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra did a series of 21-day meditations some years ago, and every so often, I still go back to them. I find the meditations very accessible. So each day starts with Oprah introducing the thought for the day, and then Deepak does the same. In the 21-day meditation called Manifesting Grace Through Gratitude, I particularly liked day 19, The Path to Total Transformation. So Deepak Chopra's introduction went something like this. Change is natural, and we all want to move in a positive direction. The path to transformation holds out an inspiring promise. By embracing life every day with openness, we are able to recognize the support that arises to meet all the challenges life brings. But manifesting grace involves inner growth, which takes time. How should you live your life while you're on the path? It's easy to feel grateful when life is going well, yet not every day is like that. Most days, in fact, are a mixture of positive and negative situations, emotions, and feedback from your environment at home and work. To get through these trying moments, you need to be prepared. You wouldn't show up to build a house without tools, and the same is true when building your own transformation. We need two tools with us on the path, knowledge and experience. Knowledge gives you a vision of the bigger picture you can trust. Experience validates that the knowledge is true. As you experience different ways in which seemingly random events aren't random but happen for a reason, you validate this knowledge and then it becomes real for you. Linked to this is the understanding that life is wholeness. This gets us out of the mindset of separation, where everything is light against dark, good against bad, us against them, whomever them happens to be. Getting beyond opposites is important, not so that you give up and let the darkness creep in, but so that you stop being stuck in conflict. To be in the light, you must open yourself to it, which is different from constantly struggling against the dark. On the path, gratitude is like a flashlight in a dark forest. It doesn't matter if the night extends for miles in every direction. All that matters is the next step that you see ahead of you. You can start on the path wherever you are. Everyone is in a position to say, yes, this situation is difficult, but I am grateful for having a higher self that can find a solution. This acknowledges that you are being guided by the light inside you. In his poem, The Guest House, Rumi speaks of treating all our experiences, good or bad, as honored guests. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. When we achieve even more knowledge and experience, complaints are transformed into delight and wonder. Gloom changes to joy. And the thought for that particular day is, my inner light is guiding me.
Now it's the time for our young people's story, our children's story. And if you'd like to come on down for the story, any young people or children, come up to the front. So while they're coming down, this is a story I've read before. Some of you will have heard it before. It's always good to hear things twice. I was asked to read it again. So that is why I am reading about Tiny, the littlest god. And you've heard this story before. Maybe you haven't heard it, but hopefully this goes down well with you. Now, you might already know that some people believe that there are many, many gods. Okay, gods who specialize in looking after farm animals, gods who look after the weather. And we've had some interesting weather the last couple of months, to be honest. Gods who look after our musicians, like Josh. Gods who look after mammies and daddies, journalists. And I'm sure there might be gods for influencers and for gamers as well. And there are even people who lived long ago called saints. You might have heard of saints. And people believe that they too look after us in a special way. But today I'm going to tell you about the littlest, tiniest god who really struggled to find her place in the whole universe, in the whole cosmos. So once upon a time, there was the little, itty bitty, tiny, very small, tiny little god, and her name was Tiny. And she lived her life hearing stories of all the big gods. And well, let's face it, she didn't really matter to anyone. Well, she thought that anyway. But she knew she needed to think of some kind of special spark of an idea that would make her existence kind of meaningful. Now, she watched humans for a long, long time. And she hit upon something that just might work, something that might make people think. And this was it. She was going to get herself noticed because she hadn't been noticed for so long. And perhaps maybe she would be loved and belonged. So here it is. She said, "You are not alone. This is the message I want to share with the world, particularly with young people. You are not alone." Now, she thought about how she might do this. So how do you think she might get her influence out there? What should she do, do you think? Would she use social media? Like something like a TikTok video. That would be a good idea, wouldn't it? Maybe set up a Snapchat account and she would attract young people. But the problem with TikTok, with Snapchat, with Insta, all of these social media platforms is that people, humans, can get very nasty. And if you put up a kind message, often it can inspire kind of bullying and unkindness. And you might have experienced that or seen that happen. When you put up a really kind message, it can result in some bullying and nastiness. So instead, she took the form of a very light breeze, because she's a god after all, with a small g. And in a voice so quiet, each person heard her message only in their mind. And she said, "You are not alone. You are not alone." And you know what? People kind of loved it. It was perfect, because who doesn't want to hear that? And pretty soon, Tiny was comforting people all over with, "You are not alone." Every evening, she took the form of a breeze and whispered in people's minds. And soon, people began to change, slowly but surely. Those who were lonely began to seek out new friends. And those who had lots of friends made new friends with those who didn't. And people began to help each other rather than to do what was just best for them. And people realized that, do you know what, we're all connected. And we can't just look out for ourselves. And so Tiny, the littlest god in the universe, made the world a much better place just by whispering those simple little words in the breeze, "You are not alone." Now, the point of this is that we can all be like Tiny God and tell those who might be lonely or bullied, who are going through tough times, that they are not alone, because you can be there for them. And so keep connecting with your friends and maybe those who are not your friends, but don't do it just online, do it in person. Thank you. That was Tiny the God. Let us now sing our next hymn, 77, "Seek Not Afar for Beauty." My reading this morning is taken from John Feehan's book, Every Bush Aflame, and we've just sung those words, "Every Bush Aflame, Science, God, and the Natural World." And I have to thank Pam McCarthy for sharing this book with me. Becoming who I am meant to be. At the core of the great ethical systems of formal religion, we find the injunction to give up your life if we are to gain eternal life. In the words of Jesus, "Those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Sell your possessions, follow me." Similarly, in Buddhism, we are urged to give up all desire. We balk at these calls to perfection, which we moderns can hardly see as other than its antithesis. The eye of our timid soul glazes over as we try to focus on these calls to perfection. For how can we give up that which is most precious to us? Is this not who we are? We are called, each one of us, to be the best we can be. Each of us is unique, genetically, and on every level that genetics underpins. We are called to make the most of our uniqueness, but we do not progress as a species, as individuals, by being on our own. While each of us contributes to the community of which we are a unique part, a contribution no other can contribute. It is the totality that constitutes the forward movement that is history. The talent of each is the talent of all. Our sense of this is vitally important to a proper understanding of the call to lose our life in order to find it. The gift of my life is a gift, both in the sense of being given to me and what I give to the whole. The spark that is the life of every other is of equal value to mine in the symphony of the whole, just as mine is to be valued in the same way when viewed from every other's viewpoint. An extension of the commandment to be the best I can is the injunction to help those other sparks of the Creator whom I encounter on my pilgrim way to become the best they can be. But still, when we reach the end of our torturous journeys with the philosophers and the theologians, we are returned to our individual selves, to what Paul Tillich calls the fragments and riddles of life, out of which we have to make a whole. At the center of the unique embodiment of human personality that I am, is the essential core of being for which we have never really been able to find a more adequate word than soul. It may not be particularly accurate in most senses to speak of the eyes as the windows of the soul, but metaphorically it articulates the deep truth that at the very heart of my being, as I look out into the world, is that which is more essential a part of who I am than is the distinguishing attire I put on this morning. From John Feehan. We will have a meditation now, followed by some silence, which will be brought to an end by some music from Josh. Meister Eckhart suggested that doing holy things does not bring us any closer to God. He invites us to just be ourselves. He says, whoever seeks God without any special way finds God as God is, in the everyday and in the ordinary. But first, focus on what you need. Food, clothing, love, respect, health, freedom. And then God will find their way to you. Thanks, Josh. What is the soul? Today I'm going to explore the concept of the soul. And I have an eye on our sculpture here by Paddy McElroy, which invites us not just to explore Christian theology, but also the wisdom and the truth that might come to us from other religions and other philosophies. Now, the idea of the soul may be a mystery and a concept that we kind of use all the time, soul, without fully understanding what it is. I'm going to try and root the discussion in the very experience of life that is common to us all. Whether you find yourself here today, in Ukraine, in Gaza, living on the streets of Dublin, or in your warm, comfortable house or apartment. As a species, we have always sought to find meaning and purpose for our lives. We have always sought the source of life. We've never been content with just settling on the notion that we are evolved biological beings with no underlying purpose other than to live and to die. We seek to understand what it is that gives us life, what animates us. Emerson said, to be yourself in a world that tries to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. We cannot survive, and we certainly won't thrive, trying to be someone other than ourselves. But what is it that makes us who we are? There is something at the very core of our being, and some people call it the soul. I'll begin by exploring essence. And of course, by essence, I mean that which makes me different from you. It is beyond gender or sexuality, ethnicity, and even tastes. Telling you where I grew up, what I do for a living, what car I drive, who I love, will tell you nothing of who I am or who I wish to become. Essence is what is fundamental, and it is permanent rather than accidental, the real, the basic. And in speaking about essence, the Confucian scholar Fang, writing in the 17th century, suggested that the Western way of trying to describe certain things with words just won't work. Now, he was debating with the Western Christian missionaries, particularly the Jesuits, who came to his part of the world spreading the Christian message and the science that was being developed at the time. The Jesuits were talking about where God actually dwelt. While we live in this sector of the universe, God, they taught, lived in another, just on the outskirts of the cosmos. Now, these words these missionaries were using did not impress the Confucian scholars or the Chinese, and their attempt to materialize all of creation was essentially for them an error. There are limitations of language when speaking of ultimate realities, Fang said. It's best to keep silent rather than try and find words. To describe the essence of the universe, he used the word qi. And it translates as breath or vital energy, the basic stuff or essence of the universe. And he talks about it as the energy that pervades all life. It links plant and animal, human, and divine, and the qi enables all to have life. The Confucian, and remember, it was Confucius who gave us the golden rule, do not impose on others what you yourself do not desire. And they would say, do not contemplate a God dwelling away in heaven. Rather, you must be attentive to your fellow human beings, responsive to society, and deeply attuned to the natural world and the cosmos, all of which form a continuum with humankind. Empathy, and the much maligned term woke, attuned to the natural world, all of which form a continuum with humankind. Do you experience or feel vital energy at work in your life? Do you see it in work in others, Now, it's often to see the vital energies of others rather than in ourselves. What gives you joy and peace, fulfillment, happiness? Is it beauty in nature? Is it the love of a companion, the depth of friendship, the memories and experience of love? Now, questions like that might help us understand our own essence. And it is a quest, and it's a journey we're on all of the days of our lives. And what gives people their essence? Love is the essence of the words and example and deeds of Jesus. It is the soul, the essence of who we are. When we try to get the essence of something, we are looking at the core ingredient, the essence of a herb, for example. That's the healing part, the tastiest part, the essential part, the soul. The soul is understood as a permanent underlying substance that is common in us all. In Latin, it is anima, breath. In Greek, it is psyche. In Yiddish and Hebrew, it is nefesh or neshama, which also translates as breath. In Irish, it is anam, my anam cara, my soul friend, my caram anima. Gavan is anam dum, my name is Gavan. We gather in ritual to name a baby. Christians name babies at baptism. And Jesus invited John the Baptist, the mad fellow who lived in the desert, to baptize him. Not sure it was to name him or to wash him of sin. Maybe his first act of undoing the belief that we had somehow fallen. The call John made was repent, properly translated as think differently or change your way of thinking. A declaration that we are all invited to live a life of love, acknowledging, like Jesus, that there is a divine spark within us all, or perhaps the chi. Now, Pope Francis, speaking at Easter a couple of years ago, said, without a name, we remain unknown. And in Judaism, when an infant takes its first breath, at the moment of birth, it becomes person. In Buddhism, the idea of the soul or the self as a permanent part of us is kind of rejected. Nothing is permanent in Buddhism. Nothing has real essence. And believing in the soul is kind of the root cause of unhappiness or imprisonment in suffering and ignorance. Understanding this truth is enlightenment in Buddhism. But I want to share this with you, and it was read from a reading a couple of weeks ago here. The Buddha said so simply and clearly that the source of happiness and unhappiness lies nowhere else but in our minds and hearts. We can make endless journeys to find happiness and engage in countless strategies to rid ourselves of unhappiness. But the key traveler on all the journeys and the central player in all the strategies is ourselves, and it is to ourselves we always return. There is a wonderful Zen saying, the only truth you find at the top of the mountain is the truth you brought with you. This is very wise and it's very true. We bring all of ourselves with us everywhere. And if that self is hurt or wounded or lost, we need to pay attention and seek healing. Now, the soul is constant throughout the Bible. Matthew 22, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. Mark 8, for what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Genesis, and God created the great sea monsters and every living soul that moves. And the Lord God formed the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. My favorite, Psalm 42, like the deer that yearns for running streams, so my soul yearns for you. And of course, Psalm 23, God is a shepherd who restores my soul? But the Christian Jewish scriptures do not tell us anything about the nature of the soul, but it does refer to it as a crucial part of a human being. Now, the Catholic Church describes it as that which animates the body, and it survives physical death and, of course, lives eternally. But what about the health of the soul? How do we nourish it? Now, we are committed to honoring science and all that it reveals to us about life. We believe in what we see. We believe in what we experience. We are open to mystery and things we cannot explain. So in thinking about the soul, I was led to the science of the human person, the theory of the hierarchy of needs and self-actualization. Essentially, what are the key things that need to be in place in order for people to achieve their potential? And this is a theory. The hierarchy of needs was developed over 50 years ago by American psychologist Maslow. And he developed this theory, this psychological health, predicted on fulfilling innate human needs in priority. And there is that word psyche, the Greek word for soul. Psychology talk of the soul, theology talk about God. The health of your soul is dependent, the health of your mind is dependent on the health of your body and the environment you dwell in. Maslow, many of you might know about Maslow, but he drew a pyramid to explain his hierarchy of needs. And at the bottom, he places physiological needs: water, food, shelter, clothing, warmth. Above that, he puts safety needs, health, personal security, resources. Above that again, he places love and belonging, so friendship, intimacy, connections, family. Above that again, he puts esteem, respect, recognition, and freedom. And finally, at the very top of the pyramid, self-actualization, becoming the most one can be. And that desire is within us all. And Maslow suggests that society must make that self-actualization within the reach of all. When we have more or less satisfied the needs as they are set out, food, shelter, health, resources, intimacy, respect, and so on, we move upwards through the pyramid so that we are able to reach towards becoming the most we can be, onwards and upwards. War and oppression seek to diminish and make scarce or deny these basic physiological needs. In war, people's homes are bombed, their access to clean water and energy are removed, their freedom is threatened, then denied, their resources are lost. Addiction and inequality also threaten and make scarce that potential for self-actualization. Indeed, self-destruction or the destruction of the self is often the outcome of war. But also, it is the outcome of addiction, of inequality, poverty, famine. It is literally soul-destroying. Now, Maslow's theory is used in the planning and the implementation of many programs by youth, health, and social care organizations today, including the one I work for. Now, all of this requires a context, a place where the land is just and where we build up the broken, as our hymn lyrics go. A place where there is a strong sense of community. There are schools, churches, social groups, family supports, friends, elders sharing and imparting their wisdom, because we don't thrive in isolation. This is Bronfenbrenner's ecological model. And he presents it rather than as a pyramid, but as a series of circles where the person is at the center. In providing support for a child in crisis, for example, we take this ecological approach and seek to bring those family and community strengths together to mitigate harms to vulnerable people. And this too is a model used by many of our NGOs who tackle poverty, homelessness, and work to protect vulnerable adults and children. Now, of course, our community may contain risks, and it does. We may find ourselves living in unhealthy and unsafe environments. Society is, after all, full of saints and sinners, racists, homophobes, organized crime gangs, and of course, Pharisees. So we put in place protective factors that promote that which helps rather than hurts. We have laws, social protections, libraries and theaters, environmental protections, personal freedoms, and everything from the UN and the WHO to our own local community-based organizations right here in our city. Now, the passage from the Sermon on the Mount jumped up at me as I was writing this, and it seems to contradict what I have outlined. Matthew and Luke have it in their Gospels. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear, for life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens, they do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. So if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown in the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? So if you put your faith in God and focus on God, God will provide for all your human needs. But as we know, it takes trucks to be allowed into Gaza. That is where the food and water and medicine will come from. It takes 700 meals to be cooked a day in one Dublin centre to feed people who are hungry and struggling to live in this most prosperous society. So it takes a caring and generous people and a community working together to make this happen. So rather than God clothing and feeding you, it is you who are called to do that. Back what I said earlier, be attentive to your fellow human beings, responsive to society, and deeply attuned to the natural world and the cosmos, all of which form a continuum with humankind. If you believe in God, perhaps this is how she works. A Garden of Eden, perhaps, where human community is at peace with itself, securing social protections for the most vulnerable, enabling all to reach self-actualization, always striving to lift people and communities out of poverty and war so that they too can move up that pyramid. Now, right and left, conservatives and liberal, will argue the ways to equity. Maslow's pyramid, together with Bronfenbrenner's model, depends on a community's commitment to provide for people, whoever they are and wherever they are. In conclusion, is it within our soul that our divine essence dwells? I am attracted to that Confucian idea of qi, the basic stuff or essence of the universe, the energy that pervades all life, that links plant and animal, human and divine, so that all can reach their potential. But we need to fulfill all that our lives require, said Meister Eckhart: food, water, respect, freedom, esteem, safety. That intimate pull we feel in our lives towards beauty and truth is perhaps our soul's expression of itself. That deep empathy and compassion we feel towards not only other people, but also towards plants and animals is perhaps the expression of our soul. And when we meet or encounter a remarkable and wonderful person, we might utter to ourselves, "They are a beautiful soul." Amen. Our third hymn now is number 123, Spirit of Life, after which we'll have our collection. Our notices, there's a managing committee tomorrow on Zoom. Coming of age is next week. You are all invited. Please do come. And finally, tea and coffee is served downstairs after the services. If this is your first time, please do come down and meet us. Thank you. Now, our final hymn today is number 207, Earth Was Given as a Garden. A tree as wide as a man's arms grows from a tiny seed. A tower 9 stories high rises from piles of earth. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. May we have the strength to face all the challenges that come in our lives and understand that we are all connected, dependent on each other's goodness and generosity. May we touch that vital energy that gives us life and purpose so that one day soon we may be free to be the best that we can be. Amen.